Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, October 28th. Coming up today, calls for a crackdown on waste crime. A Halloween house in Herne Bay aiming to raise money for life-changing medication for a young girl. And an update on the health of the Jill's boss after he had heart surgery. But first, taking a look at our top story today. Owners of a huge holiday park in Kent have unveiled plans to replace it with hundreds of new homes and oust so-called illegal occupants. Hundreds of caravan users, many of which are said to be living all year round in breach of the rules of a site in Warden Road in Eastchurch, Sheppey, could be asked to leave. Dan Essen has been looking at this story for the podcast. He's kindly agreed to answer a few questions. First of all, Dan, what do we know for the plans for redevelopment at the Kent Parks caravan site?
So far, it's a full planning application hasn't been submitted for the redevelopment of the Kent Parks caravan site. It's just a scoping report ahead of an environmental impact assessment. But basically, the owners plan to significantly shrink the actual size of the holiday park itself, and they want to build instead about 430 permanent park homes there, including apartments and retirement living and that kind of thing. But the main bit of it is that the caravan park, which currently consists of basically eight separate caravan parks unified into one, is going to be significantly reduced in size, and the area known as Sherland Dale, one of the caravan parks, that's going to remain as holiday caravan park provision, and the rest of it in future is planned to become more sort of permanent residential site.
And why have the owners decided to redevelop?
A big part of it is that they say they have concerns about the safety and condition of a lot of the caravans. A lot of them have been there for a very long time and are in serious need of work, same with the sort of static park home type things. But the obviously it's a large company that own the site, so there is a financial imperative there, and I would imagine part of it at least is that they it stands to make a decent amount of money if they redevelop it, because it's quite a large site.
Now, the story at Kent Online talks about illegal occupants. Who would they be?
So the developers tell me that there's about 400 people living in 200 caravans who've been living there illegally. What that means in practice is that basically in the UK, you can't live in a caravan full time unless it's on private land that you own and you have permission to be on. And you have planning permission to use it as full-time residential. The vast majority of caravan parks are not like that. They don't have those permissions. And in this case, the planning conditions on this site, same for most caravan sites around the country, say that you can be there for a maximum of 10 months of the year, and you have to vacate them for 2 months of the year. And the developers tell me there's a couple hundred people who have been living on the site year round basically for some time now in violation of planning conditions, though they have applied for a temporary order which would make it so that this is no longer a violation of planning conditions, to give those people time to make alternative arrangements essentially.
And what are some of the concerns of those who live at the caravan site?
So obviously some people at the caravan site are quite concerned about this. Some of them have written into Swellborough Council's planning portal saying that they weren't notified about this by the management company. Some people who our colleagues went and spoke to are also concerned about the cost involved in potentially moving their caravan if they don't manage to get a plot on the new smaller caravan site. And obviously it creates a lot of uncertainty for people about the future of their caravan and their site, which they've paid money for, and that's what some people have written in about. But obviously the developers have stressed that there's going to be a consultation before the end of the year that all residents will be invited to, and that they'll take into account the views of residents. But so far, obviously it's early days, no full planning application has been submitted, but some residents are quite concerned about the future of their plots basically.
Thanks, Dan. You can read more about this story by heading to the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. CCTV has revealed the moment a masked man broke into a shop in Ramsgate before carrying out an attack on police as they tried to arrest him. Dean Pemble hit an officer over the head with a heavy object in a carrier bag when it happened at a supermarket in King Street in October. The 32-year-old from Westgate Bay Avenue in Westgate admitted a number of offences, including assault on an emergency worker. He's due to be sentenced at a later date. A man who's been banned from contacting his former partner could be sent to prison after he was found hiding in her home in Maidstone. Bradley O'Neill was subject to a stalking protection order and a restraining order and admitted to breaching both during a hearing last week. The 45-year-old, who used to live in Orpington but now has no fixed address, will remain in custody until his sentencing. Now, a House of Lords committee is calling for an independent waste crime review following failures at sites including Hodes Wood. They say despite the Environment Agency having a range of powers, they were slow to act when more than 30,000 tonnes of waste was illegally dumped at the site near Ashford. The House of Lords Environment and Climate Change Committee is now calling for a root and branch investigation and for waste crime to be prioritised. Baroness Sheehan is the chair.
It starts with the scale of the problem because it really does beggar belief. The inquiry heard that 38 million tonnes of waste is illegally managed every year. And just to put it in some sort of context, that's enough to fill Wembley Stadium 35 times over. So that's a massive amount of waste that we're talking about.
I think one of the big cases that we are aware of here in Kent was the illegal waste that was dumped in Hodes Wood. I know, as you said, there were a lot of reports from concerned members of the public and it felt like nothing was done. And at the moment, they are doing the clear up. It's felt like a very elongated process and things are happening very slowly. Is that sort of an indicator of the state of play across the board? Can we use Hodes Wood as an indicator of just how much the Environment Agency is failing in this regard?
Yes, we absolutely can. I mean, what happened at Hodes Wood is beyond belief, really. This is a triple SI site. It has statutory protections. And there were failings from the Environment Agency, the police, the local authority, Natural England, who one would have thought would have been very protective of a triple SI site, and the Forestry Commission. Reports were made to all these authorities and there's a lot of butt passing going on. Nobody was willing to take responsibility, which I find absolutely incredible. At the end of the day, the Environment Agency should have been the lead authority. And what we found was that they did absolutely nothing over 4 years. I think the first indication that something illegal was taking place was in January 2020, when trees were felled. I think about 4 acres of trees in the Triple SI site were felled. These were reported, but nothing was done. Then over the course of a few years, and the site was prepared, and then I think serious dumping started in about 24, when 20 to 30 lorries each day were arriving to dump waste. And nothing was done until the media spotlight was shone on what was happening. And then we found that the Environment Agency did move quite quickly and impose a restriction order. Why they didn't do it before is quite shocking. I think the other thing that was really shocking about Hodes Wood is that during the inquiry, we found that residents groups were, and community groups, other people were prepared to give us evidence in writing, but they didn't want to appear on the panel. They were fearful of retaliation from some of these criminal groups who were working there. And that is really, really quite worrisome, that it was left to individual members of the public to confront these criminals when actually it should have been the police, the Environment Agency, etc.
So what would be the next steps? What are we hoping that the Environment Agency and other affiliated agencies do to tighten the restrictions so that we can see a reduction in this sort of criminal activity?
This was a short inquiry that the committee undertook. In the time that we had, regrettably, and despite our best efforts, we were unable to get to the core of the matter as to why the Environment Agency seemed unable to act. And that's why we're calling for a root and branch review of the way that the Environment Agency tackles waste crime. And we're calling on the government to incorporate the Hodes Wood case as part of this review, because we really have some very, very serious questions to answer there as to why this was allowed to go on. We just haven't been able to get to the bottom of why a restriction notice wasn't issued when criminal behaviour was clearly happening at that site.
Kent Online News.
Five Reform UK councillors from Kent have now been expelled from the party after footage of an online meeting was leaked. The video showed Kent County Council leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron swearing and threatening to mute other members while discussing local government reorganisation. A party spokesman says some of the group showed a lack of integrity and behaviour they won't tolerate. It's claimed the large number of road closures in Maidstone at the moment is killing the town. Earlier this month, 13 routes were shut at the same time and seven of those closures are still in place. Councillors are calling for a strategic review of the way KCC highways deal with planning and diversions. Bosses at a Kent garden centre say they're suffering a significant drop in trade because of roadworks for a new Aldi store. Longacres in Ashford say they've been impacted on and off since July because of the huge scheme on the A28 Canterbury Road. They've told us sales are down in the run-up to Halloween and Christmas. Bosses at KCC say the no right turn restrictions are needed to reduce congestion and make sure work can be carried out safely.
Kent Online News.
Firefighters have been called to Margate after a wheelie bin caught alight. The blaze broke out on St John's Road just before 7 yesterday evening. It's thought to have been caused by a discarded cigarette. Construction is underway on a private medical facility being built in Bluewater Car Park. Grove Radiology have been given permission for temporary MRI and ultrasound units in the red outer car park of the shopping centre. Bosses say it will enhance healthcare accessibility in the area. They're due to open in January. There are plans to turn a former gasworks in Tunbridge Wells into housing. The site on Sandown Road in High Brooms hasn't been used since the 60s. Developers have submitted an application to build 90 homes. None of them have been designated as affordable. More than 1,000 Kent villagers have signed a petition calling for action over a crossing near a Kent preschool. They say motorists frequently ignore the old-style zebra crossing on the B2015 Maidstone Road through Nettlestead. Locals want it replaced by a signalised crossing. The parish council's working with KCC Highways on a potential upgrade. Now, Rob and Yumi from our sister radio station KMFM have met a 13-year-old boy who's raising money so his mum can have cancer treatment. Oscar is running 100 miles in October and the team from The Breakfast Show joined him for a jog around a track in Canterbury.
I started this run to the fundraiser for my mum's cancer treatment.
Okay.
We started it in October and my goal was to reach 100 miles over October.
Wait, 1 month?
Yeah, one month.
Wow.
How many miles have you done so far?
I've done 65 miles so far.
Wow.
And I've added it up and it's not, I got to run more than I thought I has run because it's not going to add up to 100.
Okay, so what are we talking about? Like, have you got to do a lot more?
Yeah, I think a fair bit, an extra 20 miles.
Wow. Wow.
Actually, you're going to do a couple of days of 10K, aren't you?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, a couple of days of 10K. Right, look, Rebecca, your son's amazing. Talk us through what's going on for you then. Why are we raising this money?
Okay, so before Christmas last year, I was diagnosed with bowel cancer.
Okay.
At first, it was said that it was early stages, but then they sort of jumped quite quickly in June to say it was stage 4.
Okay.
The NHS, unfortunately, don't really have the specialist that I need to treat me.
Okay.
Whereas there is a great hospital in London called St Mark's and they have a very good oncologist there that specialise in people like me.
Okay.
And obviously they're private, so it takes us, we're raising the money to fund the private treatment. I've had a few private scans. They've been much more detailed and everything it seems to be a little bit better than what they were originally saying with the NHS. So it is doing the job. And obviously Oscar wanted to put his input in. He wanted to help straight away as soon as I spoke to him. Obviously this is difficult. And at first I didn't tell him straight away. I wanted to be ready myself. And then the moment I spoke to him and said, actually, this is what's going on, Oscar. And, you know, we got a little bit upset together. And then straight away, he was like, I want to help. What can I do? And this is what he wants to do.
Wow. Oscar, you are amazing. Are you a runner? Like, have you been running before? Or were you like, this is...
I've done a little bit of running in the past, but not as long as I've been.
No. I don't think... Fair. I don't think most runners do 100 in a month.
No,
that's right. So have you been running outside, inside, combination?
Both really, depending on the weather.
Okay.
If it's bad, we'll run upstairs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if it's sunny like today, we'll go outside.
Outside. Are you doing laps at school at lunchtime? I can get a quick lap in.
No, not, unfortunately not. But I might start.
Yeah. And have your friends joined in with you? Have you kind of like roped them in?
They haven't joined in the running, but they've started to do stuff to also help.
Oh, that's amazing.
Fundraising.
You can donate by finding the link on KMFM official socials or searching for Rebecca's Fight for Her Life on GoFundMe.
Kent Online News.
A Herne Bay man is decorating his house this Halloween to raise money to help buy life-changing medication for a young girl with epilepsy. 15-year-old Tegan Appleby can suffer up to 300 seizures a day if she doesn't have medicinal cannabis, which costs her family around £2,000 a month. After hearing about her GoFundMe, Lloyd Bushell is converting his front garden into a maze. They'll also be animatronics, live actors and scary props. He says he doesn't know Tegan but wanted to find a way to help.
No, we don't actually. I've never met her. What we do, last year was the first year we started raising money. We've had a few people comment over the years about we should put a collection bucket out or put something out for charity. We've never done it for that. I just enjoy scaring people and I love Halloween, so I think that's sort of, we get involved in that way. But last year, because we knew it was going to be quite busy, we thought we'd put a little collection bucket out, and we like to pick someone local. We tend to sort of try to find someone with a GoFundMe page. So we contacted the mother to ask if they'd mind if we raised money for her this year. So obviously she was very grateful for it, and yeah, immediately says yes.
Do you have a fundraising goal in mind? Do you know how much you'd like to raise for Tegan this year?
We don't have anything in mind. We just, anything, you know, any amount is nice. You know, we never really set a target for ourselves. We just do it. You know, we're always going to do it. We're always going to decorate the house for Halloween. So why not try and help someone else and give back at the same time?
It's quite a selfless. It's quite a selfless thing that you're doing. Have you had much response from the community? You know, do people hear about your fundraising and come down specifically so that they can donate and help support a local cause?
We've had a few people message asking if they can just have the link for the GoFundMe because they're not going to be able to make it, but they'd still like to donate. We use a company in Herne Bay called Hughes Gray's Hire. And they've agreed to do the fence panels for a really low reduced price. So that sort of helps towards it. So the difference in that we'll probably put in the bucket as well. So we do get help from people. We've had a few people offer to give us sweets and a few things like that.
And I think I read as well, is Tegan going to be there on Halloween? Is she going to be there giving out sweets?
Yes, she is. She will be there. She'll be there giving out the sweets as well. So it'd be nice to actually finally meet her as well.
You can visit the Halloween house in Pigeon Lane this Friday night. A brewing company that's been operating out of Kent for more than a decade has been forced to close. Musket Brewery has been at Loddington Farm in Linton near Maidstone for 12 years, but they've not been able to escape the struggles felt across the hospitality industry. Their lease wasn't renewed by the farm due to the challenging economic climate. The life of a Kent soldier has been commemorated more than 100 years after he died during the First World War. Reginald Clarence Rogers from Y joined the Chatham Division of the Royal Marine Light Infantry and was killed in action in France in 1918. His grave has now been identified and rededicated during a service organised by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. Work to build a new Greatness Football and Community Pavilion takes a step forward today. Close to £2 million in funding has been awarded to Sevenoaks Town Football Club and Sevenoaks Town Council for the facility at the recreation ground. Once complete, it will include new changing rooms, kitchen and refreshment areas. The first sod will be turned at the site this afternoon.
Kent Online Sport.
Football now, and the Gillingham chairman has been giving fans an update on Gareth Ainsworth's recovery. The manager had to have heart surgery earlier this month and has missed the last few games. Brad Gallinson has been chatting to the club's media rep and says Gareth is doing well.
Joe and I actually went and saw him in person. We had coffee with him early this week. You know, he went through a big ordeal. That's a big process. He's breaking records with healing, but it's a slow process. So the thing I kept having to say to him, because, you know, it's Gareth, right? He wants to be back on Monday. And his doctors and the owner, me and Joe, are saying, listen, you got to take your time. So he is doing really well, though. I mean, he's very, very active virtually. calling people. He's in all the strategy meetings, you know, with Dabo and the group. But he's doing great. He's healing. Everything went as planned. And it'll be really nice to get him back. But, you know, we just keep telling him, you got to take your time. You got to take your time. So it was really nice to see him, though. And he looks great.
That brings me on to our next point, which is the fan zone.
Yes.
It's been talked about. There's been stuff in local media. You've come out and said some bits on the fan zone. Just give us an update, because people know it's in the car park. There's some work being done. I appreciate timeline's difficult, but just talk us through the project.
Yeah, so most people will know there is a giant albatross of a building, you know, right at the car park. I think it was a sports center at one point. Now it's a fox den. doesn't really have floors or ceilings anymore. So
have you moved them out, the foxes?
Yeah, the foxes are out. Yes, the foxes are safe. No foxes have been harmed in this construction.
In this process, yeah.
Yes. So what's happened is last week, the internal demolition, so that's taking the things inside out. You can't see it from the outside, but there was a lot of stuff stored there, walls, a little bit of asbestos. So that is complete. So now hopefully within the next couple of weeks, you actually will have that building demolished, which just for symbolic reasons and actual reasons, it'll be really nice to free up that land, which is much greater than you would think. It's a very massive piece of building. And so, yeah, the idea is that we would replace that with fan zone. And again, it really gets into sort of slowly and surely trying to improve the fan experience. So fan zone is a really obvious way to do it, because the thing about the fan zone that's great is that, so pre-match and off-match days, it's a pub, it's an outdoor pub, right? But it also is part of the stadium during matches. So specifically people at the Reinemann and the Gordon Road stand, they will have another area that actually could fit 900 to 1,000 people that has food, drinks, bathrooms, music, tables. So it will also hopefully improve the match day experience, because it opens up a giant area for sort of that overcrowded area that, you know, during halftime specifically.
And just below where we're sat is the Medway stand. And yes. I believe there's plans to put more TVs in there.
Yes.
And an extra bar.
Yes, an extra bar to spread out the crowds, because there's actually quite a big area. Mm. But because there's only one place to buy food and drink, everyone, you know, sort of crowds there. Yeah, so the idea is to have more TVs so that people will spread out and they'll be able to watch TV, as well as other places to buy beverages and food to sort of improve that side as well.
The Jills have gone 5 games without a win in League 2 and are currently 8th in the table. Staying with football, and there's going to be a Kent derby in the second round of the FA Trophy. Ebbsfleet United will host Sittingbourne, while Maidstone have been drawn away at Torquay. Folkes and Invicta will be at home to AFC Totten, and Chatham Town will travel to take on Wimborne Town. Games will be played on November 15th. And briefly, in the women's game, Maidstone's Alessia Russo is expected to play for England in another friendly tonight. The Lionesses are taking on Australia at a sold-out Pride Park Stadium, which is the home of Derby County. It follows the weekend's defeat to Brazil. Kickoff is at 7. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.